are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What up? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, March the 24th, and I had a bad Pistons realization tonight. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast. Tonight I got the Hop Slam going. What are you guys drinking out there? Let me know in the comments on Twitter, wherever else you get your comments. Also, Fox Sports Detroit, we don't want to watch this year's Pistons team play in some of these flashbacks. We had the Indy game, the Derrick Rose game against the Pelicans, and I don't know if that's been shown yet. I know the Spurs game was on the other night when they beat the Spurs by 40, and of course, those are good games to watch of the season, but we don't need to relive this season of Pistons basketball. Let's pull it back to some years when it was fun to watch this team and go ahead and do that. Anyway, today we are going to give the latest news, also the latest realization I had about the season possibly being canceled, a negative thing in that regard for the Pistons in this way. We're also going to talk later on to Doc Joe Brown. The doctor is in. I let him riff. He educates us on shoes and the history of the NBA, going back to the 80s on it, Chuck Taylor, even before that. And then as it results, relates to the Pistons world, the old Pistons players and current Pistons players as well. Doc Joe Brown doing what he does best, just dropping the knowledge. I enjoyed it, and I hope you guys do. But give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook. Now, before I just started recording, I saw on Twitter that the Sporting News is doing a bracket tournament with voting of the sporting events that have been canceled so far yet that you missed the most. So I don't know if that was the moment that brackets jumped the shark completely. I know that everyone's doing one. I know it's kind of cool and it's a good concept, but man, a lot of brackets out there for sure. And so in that regard, let's talk about our bracket. We're doing 64 the most influential Pistons of all time, and we're talking about not just players but coaches and front office owners, announcers, mascots, and, of course, podcast hosts as well. Who made the Pistons who they are? And I'm looking for some fans, some of you guys out there, who want to jump on and join me and talk about the Pistons of the past and who were the most influential ones in the past. So we got to pick the 64-team bracket. I want you to email me your list of the 64 that you think should be on the bracket. These don't have to be in any kind of order, ranked, or anything like that. Just send me 64 names. I'll match them up with my 64 names, and we'll dispute, hopefully not 50 names, hopefully something more like 10, 15, maybe even 5 names that we have differently, and you'll be the reader, or listener, I should say, who comes on to that first episode, and then we'll seed them with another listener. We'll do a bunch of matchups with another listener. So get in touch with me. Send me an email at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. I'm sorry, that's the Twitter account. The email address is @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, @Yahoo.com. Again, @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, Yahoo.com. And just go ahead and send me the 64. Or if you don't have time to get to that, send me a quick email and say, yeah, I didn't have time to make 64. But put me down for wanting to be the listener who comes on and talks about some of the later matchups later on in the tournament. If we don't get enough or we don't get anybody interested, I haven't had anyone as I tape this on Monday evening. I know you guys might be taking some time to get those lists together, but please do that. But if not, we'll just bug some of the media folks or some of the other friends of the program to come on and join us for that. So that's kind of our gimmick. But hey, I was listening, doing the daily walk that I do through the lonely streets of downtown Detroit. Nothing going on down here, as you can imagine. But listening to The Ringer, Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo, as I do, I ride for those guys. I know that they're a bit of a punchline, especially Bill Simmons, in some corners of the internet. No problem with that. Still my OG guys for podcasting and some basketball talk as well. They were talking about how some teams you know, the assumption that maybe this season does not resume. Maybe there are no playoffs, and just kind of what that could mean for some individual teams ramifications-wise. You know, if no teams get bounced, no teams get exposed in the playoffs, maybe not a lot or maybe not any teams blow it up and look towards a little bit of a mini rebuild or a half rebuild or something like that. Everybody chalks up this season as a wash. You know, even Sacramento. We had Laz Jackson on about his great article from Detroit Bad Boys about how the Pistons should use their salary cap this summer. Talked about Harrison Barnes being a sin-eating possibility for the Pistons to take on a big contract along with some assets connected to it. Well, you know, maybe Sacramento's sitting there saying, yeah, maybe we would have made the playoffs if this thing would have continued. If you get rid of a contract, if you swallow your pride and admit defeat on a contract, you don't do that as a general manager in the NBA. You want to keep your job as long as possible. So maybe that's if you do that, that's another strike against you. So maybe you're admitting a little bit of defeat. So maybe you don't do that. Maybe you don't want to get closer to getting fired. And instead, you kind of look at it and convince yourself, maybe even delude yourself into thinking that everything would have been okay. The Houston Rockets, you know, everything was going really well for them for a little while with the small ball after the trades that they made, getting rid of Clint Capella, bringing in Robert Covington. Maybe they convinced themselves and hey, we would have won the championship if those playoffs would have happened. And, you know, guys like Eric Gordon are suddenly not as possibly available as they might have been had there was been an embarrassing defeat in the playoffs. And not just them. You know, there's teams everywhere. Obviously, half the teams in the playoffs were going to get bounced in the first round. There's a little bit of a math lesson for you. But Philadelphia, the 76ers, maybe they don't make any big deals this offseason. You know, see what would have happened if the playoffs would have come, despite the fact that they had a tough regular season. How about Portland? They're not shaking it up after a bad season. I mean, they're only 3.5 games out. Talk yourself into the backcourt getting healthy at the end of the season. Maybe we could have done it. The Spurs, you know, we're the Spurs. They didn't have to sit there and watch the playoffs and miss the playoffs and sit at home stewing and drive that point home that they need to do something as a franchise. Nope, we're only 4 games out. Maybe we would have made it. We always do. So maybe that's the situation that the Pistons are in, unfortunately. All the more reason, in addition to making us not crazy and sitting here and not having anything to watch on TV, all the more reason why we need these NBA playoffs to come back this season in some form or another for the Pistons to benefit from the teams that don't have success in the playoffs this upcoming offseason. But next we're going to talk to Doc Joe Brown. I teed him up and he knocked it out of the park with a review on sneakers and basketball shoes and the history of it and the evolution of it and how the Pistons fit into all this. We're going to knock this into a two-parter. We went long. I let him go late on Sunday night, and I appreciate him. Thanks to him for joining us. And that's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But hey, if you're like me, you had some time freed up recently, but you don't maybe have all the time in the world. So this is an incredible app that I'm going to tell you about that solves this problem. Works on your personal development, all the things that you want to read but don't have quite the time for. This is called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information, from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people, like business leaders, are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get to the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, your lunch break, or maybe while you exercise, rolling around on the floor like I do with the OTF workouts. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now as it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to. I like Blinkist because it gives me all that I need to know in a short amount of time, and it gets me caught up on the history of the NBA, which is something that I always need to do because we need to share all these nuggets for you guys during this time that we're all cooped up at home wanting to learn in as little amount of time as possible, as efficient as possible. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Again, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
Yes, sir!
All right, now we're being joined by Doc Joe Brown, one of our favorites here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Pro Wrestling Talk for the Pistons Fan is the podcast, and you can find him on Twitter for that show at Pro Pistons. Doc, how are we holding up during the quarantine?
Hold on, I wanted my standing ovation as I'm like a reoccurring guest. I think the crowd is still going wild. No, that was a wrestling reference. No, man, we're having a great time, actually, you know, spending time with my daughter and things like that. And I work from home anyway, so now I realize I heard on Locked On NBA how quarantined my life was anyway because I don't
feel Right, yeah, guys, like I spend a lot of my time working from home as well. So guys like you and I that kind of – And like you said, you got the 10-month-old at home, so that's kind of not so bad in some ways.
No, not so bad at all. And then you realize, like, dang, my life really sucks. I sit here, record this podcast, and I don't really go anywhere.
Well, we're recording this here on Sunday night, and I flicked on ESPN a little while ago, and they're rerunning WrestleMania 30 from 2014 in New Orleans. So I had that kind of on as background noise. And, of course, when we got you on, we got to talk wrestling. And this is the big time, not only college basketball big time of year, but this is the big time of year for the wrestling world. You got WrestleMania in early April every year. What's going on? How are they handling it in the world of wrestling? And what's the deal? I'm hearing some rumors about WrestleMania.
Right. So everything is just at the world is kind of paused, you know. So WrestleMania will occur. They broke it out over two nights. Gronk is going to be the host for both nights. But unfortunately, it's looking like it won't be live. To avoid, you know, the government's talking about shutting down anything more than four or five people. So it looks like they're going to start recording it this week and then air it over those 2 days. So that's kind of the thing. And then you mentioned WrestleMania's on ESPN. That's because there was talks prior to this whole shutdown of the pay-per-views being sold to ESPN or NBC's Peacock network anyway, just because the WWE network was moving to more of like a hardcore fan type thing. So it'd have all your 80s stuff, all your 90s stuff on there. And then just to kind of get more eyes on the pay-per-views, sell those a subscription service that has larger eyes on it, maybe like ESPN Plus, maybe like a Netflix. So this really stopped that, and I guess they kind of met a middle ground where it's like, hey, if it won't be live, can we just have all your old stuff, especially while this is shutting down? So it's pretty fun to get the casual fan on there.
For those of us who are, you know, in a past life we were big wrestling fans, or maybe some of folks out there that are hit or miss sometimes with the wrestling, how and now that you got kind of an important cultural event, you know, WrestleMania always being an important cultural event, but especially this year because it's something that's going on when there's not much else going on. If for me or other people who are thinking about it, can you just still order it as a pay-per-view through cable? Or if you're a cord cutter, how do you get it? Like, how do you get WrestleMania these days?
Sure. WWE Network, $9.99 a month. Vince McMahon will be proud of me to see the showcase of the immortals, the largest extravaganza in pop culture. That's the easiest way to do it. But you can still do it through natural way. Call up DirecTV or Comcast, and I think they'll charge you. I don't even know the price because I've been a subscriber to the network since day one. I think it's like $50. And I guess that's a savings to you if you don't want to pay $9.99 for the whole year.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the kind of the main option there. And we'll keep an eye on that, obviously, there too. But the reason we're having you on here, Doc Joe Brown, is you're my sneakerhead. You're kind of my go-to for a lot of the stuff on the show. I played hoops and followed it, but not much of a fashion guy, unfortunately. Hard to believe, I know. But and we know about Langston Galloway kind of being the expert sneaker head for the Pistons on the roster these days. But I called you out last week as someone who we got to have on to talk about, you know, some of these topics around the NBA, adjacent to the NBA. And, you know, we'll talk about video games with folks. We'll talk about some other of those things as well. But for sneakers, you know, let's get the and you're a professor, like you say, so we got to get your kind of rundown and maybe your PowerPoint of sorts of how it all kind of got started. So what's, where did it all begin with basketball and sneakers?
Yeah. So now it's such a critical thing. This, you have to think, imagine if the NFL players got to put like their own logo on their helmets. That's kind of like what sneakers are for basketball. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that the league really doesn't control, right? Because you can't tell one person like, hey, this shoe works for my foot or whatever. You want all your athletes performing at their best. So basketball has always been a sneaker fashion show. It started with Chuck Taylor. He was the first that I remember. I'm sure somebody will call me back out and be like, hey, there was some guy way back before him. But Chuck Taylor was the first person to have his own shoe, his name written on his shoe in cursive to say, hey, this is a shoe that if you wear it, you will be fast, like Chuck Taylor, the basketball player. So that's kind of where it started. And it just really transcended once Michael Jordan came into the league. Before that, the brands did exist, right? You had Converse with the weapon. You had Nike with their Air Force One, but it was kind of like a shoe endorsed by multiple athletes. So you had the Air Force One, and we all remember that iconic poster with Moses Malone, all the athletes, and then you had the Adidas Top 10. It was called the Top 10 because it was endorsed by the Top 10 athletes. But then Michael Jordan came, and it was like, this is his shoe. This is the only person that wears it in the league. It broke down the color barriers, which most of the time when you looked at old photos, it would just be, you know, everybody on the team had white sneakers. Now I know I'm getting old because I look at that and I was like, you know what? That was a kind of a clean look. Everybody kind of has on white sneakers, but Michael Jordan just kind of totally disrupted that. You know, the shoes matched the uniform to a T, so they were black and red. And then also, you know what, Matt, that I wanted to touch on, he had the swagger too. He was like the perfect guy.
Yeah.
If you see any highlights of Michael back in the day, I'm talking like I know him personally.
Yeah, well, we all do. We all kind of feel like we know Michael Jordan personally, right?
He had the cocky swagger. I mean, he wore the gold chains. He, which is crazy to think that you could wear gold chains in an NBA game. Mm-hmm. The tongue out, the wristband. So he was like,
he's always chewing gum. He had always lower shorts than everyone else.
I mean, he was like the perfect guy. If you wanted to endorse your own shoe, even if he couldn't play, it was still like, this is the best guy to have singularly endorsed their own shoe. So,
and obviously one of the better players in the league at a young age as well, playing in a big market, handsome guy, you know, like all the kind of stuff that you're looking for an iconic cultural figure.
Yeah, and you look at his interviews, and he was kind of funny, too. I know that's a big one where he was on Letterman. But anyway, that was very profitable. And I'm going to fact, because I know I talk a lot and you got a short show, but that was very profitable for Nike. Like, it basically saved the company if you read some books. And so then we just had this onslaught of brands. Like, you know, it's a copycat league. Like, everybody's shooting threes now. I mean, you name it, every brand wanted to give their own, find their own Michael Jordan and give them their own shoe. So it was more than just a group of players endorsing the shoe. We had Reebok with Dominique. I mean, and this went on for years, even to the point where, like, we had even a brand called Etonic, who was known for bowling shoes. They had swapped up Hakeem Olajuwon, and you could find some hilarious commercials of Hakeem Olajuwon promoting. And I actually have a pair of Etonics.
Nice.
Then you got your independent people like Patrick Ewing. Was like, you know what, I'll start my own brand, which you look back at that and you're like, man, that was like very big baller brandish, right? Because we got big baller brand, everybody's laughing at him. But you think Patrick Ewing did it in the 90s and it was very popular. Like, it wasn't like a Nike Ewing or a Reebok Ewing. It was just the Ewings, and a lot of people had them. And so now that kind of is occurring again. Because you see people like Kawhi Leonard, they go with New Balance, who hasn't been in the basketball game in a while. But what I wanted to say, Matt, real quick is we grew up watching Michael Jordan, and everybody kind of wanted to be him. He kind of went to this brand of Nike that was known for running shoes. And what you found was the mid-90s was that, like, Allen Iverson, again, had the swagger, had the cornrows, had, you know, this something about him. He wanted to be so much like Michael Jordan that instead of signing with Nike, he's like, well, I'll go to Reebok, who was kind of having not their best days, and I'll kind of be the face of that organization. Then you had Kobe Bryant come out, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go with Adidas because I want to be kind of like the face of that brand. So Michael Jordan influenced them to kind of say, hey, I want to have my own brand and possibly save a brand and you know, bring it back from the, you know, bring it back from the grave. So you kind of had that happen in the mid 90s. And then we had this big explosive with everybody going to their own brands. We had this huge explosive of the greatest commercials, I think, of all time in marketing history, no matter what the brand was, whether it was Adidas. I know when Adidas did the Kobe commercial, that was the first time I ever saw somebody throw the ball up in the air, catch it off the bounce, throw it around their back, and then dunk it. That's a very popular commercial. Of course, we had Little Penny. And then, of course, Michael Jordan was still cranking out the hits. You know, we still had Charles Barkley, I'm Not a Role Model. So that's just kind of where we were in the 90s. And it was great commercials, great marketing. Everybody, Matt, you played in the 90s. Everybody had to have the best shoe. Mm-hmm. And that just leads us up to Grant Hill, mid-90s. Again, guy has the swagger, and he's like, you know what? I want to go to my own brand. And kind of make, I want to be the face of it. I want to kind of make it an athletic brand. And that's where we have Grant Hill with the Detroit Pistons signing with Fila. And at the time, it was the largest shoe contract, I think, like after Michael Jordan. It was like the largest one that they ever gave to a rookie. And that's probably the most popular shoe for the Pistons. But I do want to say this, because a lot of people don't know this, Matt. And I know I talk a lot.
Oh, no, you're
that. Isaiah Thomas was with Converse, and Converse had the weapon, and they came out with a red and blue pair, you know, for the Pistons, and they had like a purple and gold pair for Magic, and then they had a black and white pair for Bird. But that kind of shows just how big Isaiah was at the time to say, like, hey, we got the two biggest stars, Magic and Bird, and then Isaiah has his own colorway of the Converse weapon too. But Isaiah left there, and he went to ASICS, which is known as a running company, and he had a shoe called the Gel Spotlight. And actually, they just retroed that shoe, the Isaiah Thomas Gel Spotlight, like 3 years ago. You can find some on eBay. I have a pair I actually got from a sneaker store here in Detroit. It was a big release. He did some autograph signing, so that's just pretty cool. And one of the less well-known shoe, I would say, icons is Isaiah Thomas. To say, like, hey, I got my own Converse weapon. Hey, I kind of went to a brand that was known for running shoes, and they created a basketball shoe for me. A lot of Piston heads don't know that. But just back up to Grant Hill again. I remember I played when the Grant Hill sneaker came out. I was in fifth grade, and I was playing on my eighth grade basketball team, swag. And
nice.
I remember, yeah. The whole team had his shoes. It was just so big in Detroit, mm-hmm. just to have like this player. And, you know, before the injuries, Grant Hill was phenomenal. I think of him catching that alley-oop from Lindsey Hunter, mm-hmm. one of his first games. Oh, my gosh. I still get chills. The Palace was going crazy. That was back when they had actually Palace embroidered in the floor. So his first two shoes were really iconic. And actually, he just signed a lifetime deal with Fila. That's how iconic the shoe was, not at that time, because eventually he parted ways with Fila, but mm-hmm. now that he's more of a businessman, he actually signed a lifetime deal with Fila, I think, in 2018. And so since then, they've been resurrecting some of his shoes from like 95, 96, to Grant Hill 1, to Grant Hill 2, and to Grant Hill 3. The first three were his most iconic pair. They probably outsold every, I don't have the stats on it, but I'm sure they outsold everybody at that time, just because of his popularity, him and Jason Kidd. I think, were they co-rookies of the year?
Yeah, they were co-rookies of the year. And I think people might forget about that, is that you had the next Jordan coming through, and there was a few guys, and Harold Miner was one of them, I think, for half a year.
Baby Jordan.
But Grant Hill was like, he was like living up to that for a year, a year and a half. And then, of course, the team never really took the ascent that you would hope the next Jordan's team would. But like you said, it wasn't just the play on the court. It was the Fila deal, the Sprite commercials, because of course, yes, Jordan had to have the Gatorade and McDonald's and Hanes and all the stuff that we remember him from, and turned it into not only some good side money, but really, you know, obviously the kind of money that Michael Jordan makes outside of his professional contract became bigger than his professional contract in some ways. But yeah, interesting that, like you noted, that Isaiah Thomas was a guy that, you know, a little guy. You don't think, mm-hmm. you normally think of the dunkers as the ones that are going to have the shoe deals. And of course, Grant Hill kind of lived up to that. But, and you sent over some notes, and another one that jumped off the page was Sheed, right? I mean, so what was the deal with Sheed back in the day? I again, this is when I'm done playing by the time Sheed
is playing. I'm in college at this point, so I'm just wearing whatever shoes I had left back from high school at this point.
Right. So let me get up to sheet real quick. So you have like this 96 to 2000 era where Michael Jordan is clearly dominating the sneaker industry. All you have to say is the Jordans. But then you have all these new guys. You got Iverson, you got Kobe, you got Grant Hill. Like kind of like the young talents of the NBA. And actually that's when Sheed was with the Bullets. If you know, I'm sure nobody will remember that. But Sheed always wore Air Force Ones, which is funny. It would kind of be like you know, me today wearing some Michael Jordan Ones in the game. And people would say, like, you know, at that time when Air Force Ones were released in the 80s, they were a very revolutionary basketball shoe. But technology has gotten better. And I know it's like Matt around, like he had like some foot issues, like some plantar fasciitis or something. Yeah, and people used to always laugh and joke and say, well, he needs to stop wearing those Air Force Ones because, you know, the shoe is so dated and the technology has gotten better. But apparently that's what he played with, at, you know, growing up. And that's what he was that's what he desired to play in the most. And so actually he's like after Grant Hill, the next big person to have their own shoe that played with the Pistons. It is just the Air Force One. So people will say, well, hey, he just plays in the Air Force One, but they gave him that iconic symbol on the back of his fadeaway. You know how he kind of gets it at the elbow and you know it's him. So they actually call those the Sheeds, the Nike Sheeds, the Air Force One High with that fadeaway Sheed emblem on the back heel is kind of like his, is not an Air Force One. They actually call it its own separate shoe, the Nike Air Sheets and or something relative to that. And they actually just reintroduced those last year. I think it was 2018. They reintroduced those, and they're the all white pair with blue. And Nike did an Art of the Champion pack. And that was actually the pair that he wore when the Pistons wore the title in 2004. So you're right. After Grant Hill, he was like the next Piston that really had a significant impact on the sneaker culture. And I remember when he played for the Trailblazers and he had the black and white pair of Sheeds, you know, just Air Force Ones with his symbol on the back. It was still very popular here in Detroit. People liked that shoe. And then when he came here, everywhere you went, people saw the blue and white Sheeds. I see people still at the game wearing the blue and white Sheeds. They have multiple colors of them. Some people have the red and white ones. They even came out with low top ones just because, you know, people know Detroit ballers like to wear low top Air Force Ones and stuff like that. And they still put a symbol on the back. So that was awesome.
And a big thanks once again to Doc Joe Brown. Check out the Pro Wrestling Talk for the Pistons Fan podcast. And we're going to come back with some more from Doc Joe Brown tomorrow. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Pistons. I am your host, Matt Shook. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.